This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Should Boston schools have more freedom and independence? And should school administrators be given more autonomy when making budget, staff, and curriculum decisions?
A new report says the more flexibility for Boston schools, the better. It says increased autonomy can improve school performance, and it recommends that Boston schools act more like charter schools and be freed of rules laid out in teachers' unions contracts and central office requirements.
We're going to hear from a skeptic of this push for expanded school autonomy in a few minutes. But first, Dan French, executive director of the Center for Collaborative Education and one of the authors of the report, which was prepared for the Boston Public Schools with funding from the Boston Foundation. And Dan French, welcome to Radio Boston. Good to have you.
Happy to be here.
And I want to ask listeners to get in on this conversation. Do you think Boston schools should operate more like charter schools? Should school officials have more control over hiring, curriculum changes, and budgeting? Let us know what you think. 800-423-8255. That's our number, 1-800-423-TALK. And let me jump right into this, Dan French. The city already has something of a hybrid system, about a third of the schools operating with some level of autonomy and flexibility. There are charter schools and so on and so forth. In your executive summary, you ask, how can the system provide all schools and all school leaders with this flexibility? So what's the report's vision of how a fully autonomous school system would work in Boston?
So just a clarification, I don't think the study recommends that Boston schools become more like charter schools, but that Boston schools have greater flexibility. So all of the schools that are members of the Boston Public Schools have the greater opportunity to become high-performing.
But is it fair to say that you want schools to have the kind of flexibility that charter schools enjoy?
Sure. The main finding is that if schools are going to be held accountable for results, then resources and decision-making should be placed in the hands of those closest to students and parents, and that is principals and teachers. That's just plain common sense. With that said, autonomy is not a panacea nor a guarantor of school success. Mm-hmm. Rather, hopefully, it provides a set of conditions that enable school leaders and teachers to be more resourceful and creative. And autonomy should be viewed as a way of empowering both leaders and teachers. However, you have to make sure that there's structures in place at the school level to guarantee teacher voice and decision making. So through representation on governing boards, having a say in determining work conditions, teacher hiring, curriculum across the board.
Let me ask you for real examples here, and I want to push you a little bit because, and I do this for the sake of our listeners and also for my sake. Sometimes these conversations get very quickly down into the weeds and sort of theoretical. So I want a real example, an aspect of a traditional school, how a traditional school functions today, something real, something that we can understand, and how it might change for the better with more autonomy.
So some examples of what schools that have greater autonomy within the Boston Public Schools have done, and it's not to say that traditional schools can't do it, but autonomous schools have greater flexibility. So many secondary schools have 4 longer school days for students in order to create 1 shorter day, so they can free up a block on that 5th day for more professional development time for faculty. You have in secondary schools, instead of separate English and social studies, you have integrated humanities courses, something that actually something that started in autonomous schools that have now been adopted by many traditional high schools in Boston. So one of the goals is hopefully the spawning of different types of practices. You have in some schools, instead of guidance counselors, you have student support coordinators with teachers taking on some advising responsibility and student support coordinators doing more leveraging social services into the school.
Hmm. Let me ask you how the sort of move toward more autonomy leads to accountability, or how accountability can also be embraced. Because in theory, autonomy might sound like a great idea, but what about when a school falters? Because then parents, teachers, students might miss a centralized administration that can step in and fix the problem.
Yeah, so we've always believed, and it's part of the recommendations of the study, that autonomy and accountability go hand in hand. If you're going to be given greater flexibility, then you also need to be held accountable for supports. But hopefully that accountability is one of support supporting schools rather than penalizing them. That, if you have if you're annually tracking schools' progress and every few years providing them with a more in-depth school quality review, then you can be proactive with struggling schools. So, and we've seen with the scale-up of autonomous schools, not every autonomous school has been successful. There's been some that are struggling just as much as there's some struggling traditional schools, and there's been successful ones just as there have been successful traditional schools. We have found, though, that there's a greater percent of schools that have greater flexibilities that are having some success.
Mm. Dan French, stand by. I want to introduce Richard Stuttman. He is the president of the Boston Teachers Union, and we promised you, listeners, a skeptic of this movement, and Richard Stuttman is that. And welcome back to the program. Great to have you on Radio Boston.
Nice to be here.
So we said that that when it comes to more school autonomy, you're a bit of a skeptic. What's the source of your concern about where this leads or where it might lead?
First of all, thanks for having me, and thanks for having another side to this story. I think it's unfair to characterize me as a skeptic because I'm not. I want to point out that there are lots of ways to do things that are good. Hmm. For example, Dan mentioned two ideas I happen to agree with: extend the school day in four schools or elongate a school block for 4 days a week, I should say, and have a fifth day for released time for P&D. And then hire school site coordinators or school council coordinators. Student support coordinators. We have a lot of acronyms flowing around.
That is true.
The first issue that Dan raised only takes a 55% vote of the staff. And we have many schools that have an extended day and an early release on Friday, Thursday, or what have you. Mm. And they got there with a 55% vote, which I would maintain isn't a high threshold, and it's certainly something that can be, if it's a good idea, and I think it is, a school should vote for it, and if a principal can't get 55% of the staff to vote for it, then the principal doesn't have the support of the staff. The second thing, hiring student support coordinators, we had, anyway, a few years ago, well over 30 of them. It doesn't take a vote. It doesn't take anything special. It doesn't take autonomy to do that. So there are many, many things that can be accomplished on a daily basis without autonomy. Now, I'm not saying autonomy is bad, but I think it's a disservice to say that it's responsible for things that can't be done otherwise, because they can be done otherwise.
But let me ask you, and I'll take you at your word that you don't want to be cast as a skeptic here, but you have raised questions. You've raised concerns about where this might lead. You were quoted in the Boston Globe this morning as saying that granting this kind of autonomy to more and more schools will eventually lead to a dissolution of the public school system as we know it. So I just want to know how do we get there? How could it get us to that point?
Well, I think, first of all, we're talking about autonomy. We should be talking about equality as much as accountability and autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can accomplish that a few different ways. I think by favoring autonomous schools to the extent that they benefit at the expense of non-autonomous schools is a disservice to our students. So when I caution about the dissolution of public schools, I caution about that. And I'm afraid, and I think history has shown, that autonomous schools have to be monitored more closely than they are currently. And we have a history in Boston of autonomous schools that have done well, and that's point one. Point two is that we have a history of autonomous schools in Boston that have not done well and that have become turnaround schools. And I think to give the audience a fair picture of this, that has to be in the report, and it really wasn't.
Mm. Is that fair, Dan French? Let me ask you about this, because giving schools more autonomy doesn't always lead to better achievement. And Richard Stuttman made reference to schools that didn't always do well. We had the case of the Deaver and the Holland and Dorchester 3 years after they were granted more autonomy. They were deemed low performing and they needed help.
Yeah. So I actually wholeheartedly agree with Richard's last two points, that there are ways in which autonomous schools have had some benefits that traditional schools haven't. And I think the goal is to be able to extend those to all of the schools in the district. So, for example, and I think Richard would agree on this example, autonomous schools have had the opportunity over past years to determine certain discretionary essential services, whether they want the service or they want instead the equivalent dollars and added to their budget. Hmm. And we would wholeheartedly agree that this is a practice that should be extended to, and it's in our recommendations, extended to all schools to decentralize as many resources and services to schools as possible. And around that autonomous schools need to be monitored more closely, wholeheartedly agree. It's one of the things that we also recommend, that there needs to be a strong accountability system to ensure that all of the schools, including every single autonomous school, are doing well and that they're supported when they're struggling way before they get labeled by the state a turnaround school.
All right. Stand by. I want to invite our listeners into this conversation. Listeners, do you think schools would do better operating with a lot more autonomy, a little more autonomy, perhaps more like a charter school? Should school officials have more control over their budgets, over hiring, over curriculum changes? What are your thoughts? 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Richard Stuttman, I'd like to ask you if... in other words, is greater autonomy does it necessarily contradict the idea of greater accountability? Do they necessarily oppose each other?
Well, greater autonomy without accountability is obviously not what we're looking for. And greater autonomy without having some supervisory role for the central office is not something that I think we can afford. I think Dan's point is fair, at least on the surface, that all schools would benefit from some autonomies. But I think what we have to realize is the reason why the 33% of our schools which have autonomy right now benefit financially is because the other 67% lose.
Hmm. So it's now, a zero-sum game.
It is a zero-sum game. And if we went to 100% autonomous on the financial end, all of our schools would actually, the 67% might gain a little, but the 33% would lose because they have been seriously advantaged by this. So no one is manufacturing money, no one is manufacturing resources, and if one school gets more to spend per capita, as autonomous schools do, now they don't initially, but they get to save money on unused expenses.
But wouldn't making more schools autonomous sort of level the playing field and level that funding discrepancy?
I don't think so. I think a lot of autonomous schools have the wherewithal. First of all, there's a limited sum of money, both in the city and from outside. And the funders, the grantors who are out there give money to autonomous schools for a lot of personal and political reasons. They don't have enough money to give to the 120 schools. They're going to give them to the same select few schools that they currently do. And I think having a central budget that is fair, and I think the central budget that we have right now is relatively fair, is a way of evening the playing field.
Hmm. Dan French, your response?
Once again, I'm not in huge disagreement with Richard. Absolutely, there should be as much of a level playing field as possible for every school within the district. And the district took a huge step towards doing that in the past few years when they implemented what's called student-weighted funding, in which the amount of dollars that goes to a school is dependent upon the unique population that it serves. So, and in terms of beyond that, the only additional advantages that autonomous schools get is through these centralized services, which we absolutely agree should be extended to every school in the district. Mm. So the way to level the playing field, we think, is through extending greater flexibility to more schools while, as I said, being mindful of both district constraints and union protections.
All right, let's get a couple of callers into this conversation with some questions. Carrie is calling from Walpole. Hi, Carrie, you're on the air.
Hi, Anthony. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question for Mr. Stuttman regarding the example of the Orchard Gardens Pilot School in Roxbury, where when it went into turnaround status, the principal there was granted tremendous autonomy over hiring, budgeting, and curriculum. And that my question is, what would you attribute the success of the Orchard Gardens School over the last 4 years to, if not that autonomy? And do you think those positive changes would have been possible without granting the administration that autonomy?
Well, let's give a quick history of Orchard Gardens. For 4 years, it was totally autonomous, and it had four or five different principals. In fact, the superintendent, then Tom Paysan, came in and would restructured the school and kicked out the governing board because the school was so dysfunctional. It became a turnaround school as a result of the autonomies. And then, arguably, it had less autonomy, and it did better. And it did better for a few reasons. One, I would argue, is it was more closely monitored by the state as well as the city. And two, it got a ton of money. Now, what we've noticed now is that the money is about to dry up at Orchard Gardens, and the principal has abandoned Orchard Gardens. So that principal's now moved to Newton. I think if we're going to say that autonomy works, we have to explain how autonomy hurt Orchard Gardens. It certainly didn't help it. It pushed it into underperforming status, as it did as well at two other schools where we had autonomy that turned into turnaround schools, which is a designation from the state, as you suggest. So I think autonomy in that case not only hurt Orchard Gardens, it was the money as much as anything else, and the tremendous support that Orchard got from the President of the United States, the Governor of the Commonwealth, and then Mayor Menino, who routinely supported Orchard Gardens as one of the bellwether doing well schools in Boston. That's why Orchard Gardens has done well.
I want to make time at least for one more call. Kristen is calling from Roslindale. She's a Boston public school teacher. Kristen, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm interested in the comments from both gentlemen on the show today about what autonomy would look like on a micro level. I'm a Boston public school teacher, as I said, and when I think about autonomy coming to my school, I wonder how would it change my students' ability to be successful on an individual level? What would be different in the course of my workday in working with these students and helping them to achieve at the standards that we set? And as I think about it,
Kristen, you know what? I'm going to just take that question because our time is running out, and you put a real sort of working life question on the table. Dan French, respond to Kristen, if you will.
Well, I think the main benefit you would receive, Kristen, is greater control over the decisions and resources you have at your school level to do what's best for your kids, so that you have flexibility over district curriculum, assessments, over who you hire, over how you manage your schedule, in order to meet the unique needs of the students and parents that you serve.
Kristen, are those the kinds of things that you would value as a teacher? Do you think that would help your students?
It seems as if many of the things Mr. French is mentioning are actually in support of Mr. Stutman's earlier point, where he said there are lots of things that we can do that don't require autonomy. And many of the things that Mr. French is mentioning, we could address as we stand with school site council issues, with various issues in terms of the curriculum for the district. We can make purchases of additional textbooks with different kinds of budgetary line items. I'm just not convinced that autonomy is going to really make an effect on student performance.
Are you concerned, though, Kristen, that it might do the opposite? I mean, it sounds like, I mean, you're pushing back here in a way that's quite articulate, but I'm just wondering where your skepticism comes from.
My skepticism comes from the fact that the teachers that I work with every day, Boston Teachers Union members, are, in fact, currently doing everything at their disposal to help their students achieve, whether they're in a school that has got their autonomy or not. And the administration that we work with is doing everything at their disposal to help our students achieve, whether the school is autonomous or not. My concern is that giving more schools autonomy will not give more schools greater achievement levels, because I don't think the link is clear.
Well, Kristen, we're going to leave it there, and I'm really grateful that you put this note of skepticism on the table. Our time is up, but obviously this is a debate that's going to continue. And listeners, you can find a link to the full study from the Path Forward School Autonomy and its Implications for the Future of Boston Public Schools at RadioBoston.org. Dan French, Executive Director of the Center for Collaborative Education, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Richard Stutman, President of the Boston Teachers Union, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Listeners, stay with us. A lot more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks with Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.